I was asked this morning if I would be entertaining and inspiring, and would I be good? That is up to you all to decide. But thank you for having me. I love to canoe. I have gone canoeing since I was a teenager. I like kayaking and rowboating, but I always come back to canoes. My favorite place to canoe is on the Kickapoo River in western Wisconsin. And once we got a group of friends to canoe down that winding river together. There is really no better way to examine humility than in a canoe. Some people want to rock the canoe, setting others up to fall. Some pretend they are experts, even though they don't swim and have never stepped foot in a canoe. Others worry about canoeing with a partner, as they cannot possibly coordinate the communication necessary to canoe with their spouse. In fact, as I think back to that trip, the couple that refused to canoe together rented kayaks instead. They are now divorced. I had another friend who insisted she was experienced and would need to steer. If you haven't canoed, you need to know that the steering all takes place in the back. We paired her with a beginner, thinking their skills would complement. Yet we kept finding their boat crashing into rocks and under the brush. We couldn't figure out what was going on with them. They had the most experienced canoer, we were told. Finally, my wife Ann and I trailed behind, noticing that the person who insisted she could do it all alone would stop paddling and eat a sandwich or stare off into space, while the person in front was madly trying to make the boat follow his lead. We always insist children sit in the middle between adults to support them in their learning. When canoeing, you quickly discover things go more smoothly when you can be honest about your abilities, take responsibility, quickly apologize for any mistakes, and enjoy the ride. My wife and I find our ability to canoe together is entirely dependent on how we are doing at communicating in the rest of our relationship. If we stop leading with our ego and start leading with our heart, we can steer that boat. How do we lead with our heart instead of our head? If we exhibit humility, can we be successful? Is humility tied to gender roles, and what do we do about that? If we admit our shortcomings, do we set ourselves up for criticism? Humility is a tricky aspiration. Let's explore how to examine and how to deepen that quality. Our children's story this morning reminds us that you don't have to be big and powerful to help another. Often the first step in addressing humility is to look at ourselves, or we may end up like the lion, and no one will be there to free us. To strengthen our humility muscle, I am offering steps that we can all use. Number one, find that muscle and start to build it. Don't be a bullying lion. Don't assume you are the whole show at the zoo. Remember, you are part of a huge jungle. It is contrary for many of us Unitarians to admit we are not experts. As a faith body, we are one of the most highly educated religions. We like to think that we know all the answers, and if we don't, we're pretty comfortable faking it. To counter this notion, I look to Unitarian Universalist Reverend Kimberly Rochelle Hampton. She's author of the blog and church consulting firm East of Midnight. I was talking to her a couple weeks ago, and she says, we have to get comfortable with humility and actually acknowledge that we may not know everything. Educator Parker Palmer was right when he said, we don't need to pretend to know the universe. Step two, be honest with yourself and then others. When we strip away our ego, we can look at our imperfections with gratitude. We can open Be open to the talents of loved ones and embrace their gifts that complement us. Our first reading asks us to look at those limitations. Rather than wishing we were a river that flows uphill or wishing we were a different kind of person, can we accept our limitations and be grateful for ourselves and who we truly are? Flawed and all? Do we have the daring to do that? Can we be vulnerable and totally honest about the limits we have and the hurts we hold? In this step, I dare you to make a list of your limits. Make another list of your hurts and the ones you caused others. Howard Thurman's meditation takes us to the next stage after the soul bearing look at our vulnerability and calls on us to improve. But we cannot improve what we cannot admit is flawed. So total honesty is what is called for here. Thurman asks us to call upon divine love of the world and ask for help in that vulnerable place. Call on deep love and not fear reaching out to others for help. Asking can be so scary. We assume others will not love us if we admit our limitations. Which takes us to step three, building our humility. Apologize, and apologize properly. None of these half-muttered little apologies, you know. Take a look at the list you made, your limits and hurts you brought about, and apologize. And to do that effectively, we have to really admit that we are not perfect. None of us would be in this universe if we were perfect. We, like our universe, is constantly evolving. This takes me to a quote I ran into again this week that I love from Stephen Hawking. One of the basic rules of the universe is that nothing is perfect. Perfection simply does not exist. Without imperfection, neither you nor I would exist. So honor the hurts and imperfections and then apologize for any you may have caused. Proper apologies start with owning the action, expressing remorse, and admitting responsibility. Make amends to make it right. And as Unitarians, we can make a covenant with the other party, not just for them, but for you too, because we grow from exploring vulnerability. Is there a danger in not growing your humility? I argue that it is far more serious than just not being a good person or just not being nice. If we do not examine ourselves and our shortcomings and the sources of our own anger, we cannot heal ourselves. If we cannot heal ourselves, we are in danger of increasing suffering. Parker Palmer again reminds us that violence is what happens when we don't know what else to do with our suffering. I call on you to examine these pains and to be vulnerable. To say out loud, I was wrong. I'm sorry I doubted you. I'm sorry I let you down. I'm sorry this is not my best attribute, but I want to make it better and I want to rebuild your trust. I dare you to apologize to someone today or this week. That humility can prevent violence and grow love in our world. In our second reading, we hear, may growing awareness of our mixed motives and morals increase our humility. Address how admitting I am not perfect is never cut and dry. We might be great at admitting our mistakes to our children and then become arrogant with someone we mentor at work. We might be wonderful at being generous with someone we don't know, but then are unable to share with a family member we had a disagreement with. This part of our humanity makes us feel raw. It is indeed a part of white culture to desire perfectionism and even gloss over painful parts of our story to get to comfort. I am asking you today to examine the assumptions you make around humility and unpack this needed attribute. We have to look at assumptions our culture put upon us. We often encounter attitudes that humility is only for the meek or for the poor or for women. Now you might think, oh, I don't think like that. I know I like to pretend that I have no views influenced by stereotypes because I am a good progressive after all. You can laugh, I think it's funny. Yet when we take our deep dive and look at humility in the face, we have to address how far back these assumptions about humility were put on us. In fact, I was reading recently Chittister's Christianity, A Global History. Prevailing standards of female conduct, which required modesty, humility, and subservience to men, certainly influenced the insistence that a woman's head must be covered. Paul the Apostle required women to be quiet and insisted it was shameful for a woman to speak. He saw women as open, and that opening needed to be shut, or they would expose themselves to supernatural access. In this letter to Corinthians, Paul insisted it is shameful for a woman to speak in church. Corinthians 14:35. By closing the top of the head, having long hair, shutting the mouth, the dangerous female body and spiritual forces could come under man's control. Paul wrote this letter to the Corinthians circa AD 53. It's about 20, 25 years after Jesus died. Paul was instructing people that what has become the best-selling book of all time, this particular Bible message, has been produced and shared at least 5 billion times. So when you think about what humility's false messages have put upon us, don't blame your parents or the media or political parties for putting humility in a box that only belongs to those who our society likes to suppress. Personally, I'm blaming Paul for this. And now that I know it's Paul who might have started these trends, I call on all of you to make today the day humility being just for women or other marginalized groups. Today is the day that you let that notion go. Which takes us to step five. Humility is for everyone. I have many friends who identify as women, immigrants, people of color, LGBT folks, and they feel angry about having been taught to have humility. And this is because they haven't been taught the right definition of humility. They have been given a menu where humility and confidence cannot sit at the same table. They have been told they are the mouse and that the lion is not a role they are allowed to fill. Reverend Kimberly Rochelle Hampton offers that some people get confused thinking humility is suppression. And suppression is not humility. Suppression is not good. Some people wrongly use the word humility when they mean suppression. Paul's letter to Corinthians was not to have women who could be honest about their humanity and admit their wrongs. No, Paul used the word humility when he was really wanting to say that he wanted women to suppress their humanity and suppress their power. This same message has been repeated more than 5 billion times, and it is also one that has been extrapolized onto all marginalized populations. Step six. Humility is not suppression. Humility engages our vulnerability. Women have been long told that they should be quiet or meek or not to brag. Perhaps this is why so many women apologize for things they didn't even do. Rather than talking about confidence and humility like they are opposite sides of a coin, perhaps we need to recognize that some people use the word humility when they want to quash the spirit of a person. In her research, Dr. Brené Brown shows that vulnerability conveys authenticity, which in turn is associated with trustworthiness and human connection. According to Brown, our willingness to engage with our vulnerability determines the depth of our courage and the clarity of our purpose. We might be more comfortable with the disabled or people of color if they are quiet and not prideful. Or maybe we have the assumption that if we can see humility in a woman but not in ourselves, if we have a different gender identity. Or do we look at someone who is a lesbian or transgender and accept, as long as they keep to themselves, I can put up with them? We really can't address humility in ourselves until we look at these stereotypes and see if any of them have snuck into our own histories and might be playing out in our work life, our church, our community events. And that first step is taking our personal inventory, not just about our shortcomings, but about any assumptions we have made about humility. The lion is not the only one who can have pride and needs humility. If we are going to build our humility muscle, we have to get comfortable with this juxtaposition that humility brings. We are going to have to look deeply at stereotypes that humility brings up and admit that we are human. In Elizabeth Gilbert's Eat, Pray, Love, she writes, "You must stop looking at the world through your head, and you must look through your heart instead. And that way, you will know love." Can humility sit comfortably in the paradox of leadership? Our second reading today dares us to look deep inside our secret places where these misnomers about humility exist and asks us to dispel that. President Obama said, "I actually found that I became more humble the longer I was in office, but I think I also became less fearful." Obama frequently spoke about how, as leadership improves, one builds humility, naturally growing more confidence. Lots of Jesus' lessons about humility were intended for the oppressors. And frequently, these messages about the meek inheriting the earth are misappropriated to people of oppressed identities. People take these messages and use them to suppress others, but even in over 2,000 years of history, Jesus was concerned with lifting up marginalized voices and teaching oppressors about humility. Today is a call to apply the right aspect of humility to our communities. Step 7, reframe and recenter humility. We are called to come out of a privilege paradigm and reframe humility to be one of equity. Not equality, but equity. Recently, I was at a meeting for Meadville Lombard, my seminary, on humility, and we all discussed this paradox. One aspirant to be a UU minister, Rebecca, brought up that if she admits a mistake, it feels risky because she is a woman and she feels like that gives up her power. To her, humility gets right at that place of vulnerability that Brené Brown researches. Amanda, a Midwestern candidate for ministry, said, "We are supposed to market ourselves and say positive things. And yet, if we say too much, then we are told we don't have humility. When do we speak and when do we pull back?" This is what I mean about humility being wrongly labeled as suppression. A big part of humility, after we take our inventories of our shortcomings, is to admit our mistakes in asking ourselves, when do we step back and when do we leave space for someone else's voice? There is a balance and an equity to humility. And recognize that that balance isn't equal. Sometimes it means that someone gets more that maybe got less in the past. If it is a group that isn't used to getting much, then how do we give space for others? Maybe at your next family gathering, let the people of color, or the LGBT family members, or the women offer their ideas before others share. Balance the boat. May our growing awareness of humility and the baggage it brings to our communities allow us to travel to a new destination. If we have gone off the course in our humility canoe or into the brush, honestly assess why it happened. Apologize and take a course correcting action before you hit the rocks. As a faith community, we can all work to grow this muscle and steer our canoes together. Inevitably, the canoes may drift a little. Be the ones to teach that equity is part of your commitment to humility. We need to balance our canoe together. Everyone has to be in the boat. Blessed be, and may it be so. Amen.